It is time for the Football Sack Podcast. My name is Matt G. Across the table from me is Supernova. G'day, mate.
G'day, g'day.
And sitting next to me, Michael Rochek.
Hello, guys.
Now, first up, boys, congratulations last week. You hosted the show without me. Good job.
Thank you.
Michael, you hosted the show. What did you feel like in the host chair?
Well, I was trying to encapsulate some of the energy that's in your voice currently. And it was really a great experience. And looking forward to doing it whenever the chance presents itself.
Michael, on the road here, we thought we were on to winner. We thought we'd struck gold with A-League, with football, because we had a look at the Daily Telegraph.
And you read the Telegraph?
We glanced at it.
It actually came across our eyes.
And why was that, Michael? It was interesting, wasn't it?
The word A-League was on the front page of the Daily Telegraph.
What?
Yeah.
Out of town.
Except that it was how a league player had lost a whole lot of money on some stupid bets.
We thought not
the same.
We rightly thought that it was A-League. And I don't know if the Daily Telegraph editorial team will take too kindly to that, because their whole MO is to not include football in anything. And a whole lot of A-League fans will see that and go, but still nonetheless feel kind of supported by the Daily Telegraph.
So the game I put to you is the Czech game, Michael Rochek. I know you keep trying to get rid of this game. I'm not going to let it go. On the back of this, if we do ever see the A-League on the front page of the Daily Telegraph, will you do a nudie run?
Jesus. You've really put me on the spot there. Look, the A-League's been on the front page of the Telegraph once or twice in its existence.
So you've got to do a pro rata nudie run.
Yeah, I've got to do several nudie runs, I think. The problem is that really during the rugby league season, it is rugby league week. The Daily Telegraph, it's the ownership structure. The News Limited owns the league, and the league owns News Limited, and it's all a bit incestuous. But the A-League has been on the front cover a few times. When Sydney won the grand final, they were on the front cover the first time and the last time. So it's not to say it can't happen, but it's not very likely when league season's on.
Yeah, especially not in the off-season. How did you go last week? Did you have fun? Can you tell me a bit more about what it was like to miss me? Did you miss me is what I'm basically trying to ask.
Pete, I think we shed a tear at one point.
Well, yeah, we did.
We were a bit beside ourselves at first. We had to actually sort of hold each other and think to ourselves.
We had to
what
try and
would
pump
Matt
each other
do?
Up. Yeah,
mm. yeah.
I actually made a couple of bracelets and sold
did
them.
You?
What would Matt do?
Yeah, I've had a few people make similar bracelets in my past life.
Yeah.
Not in my past life. In my past.
In your past.
A few years.
Yes. Yes.
In your past life. What were you in the past? A butterfly?
No, I was an amazing football player.
Well done. Well done.
Let's move on to the Young Socceroos. They have had a 5-1 defeat, epic defeat, to Spain. That has played out as we were on air on Beyond the 90. It's unfortunate, to say the least.
It sure is. And I suppose after being 1-1 against Ecuador, 3-2 a loss against Costa Rica, there wasn't a lot to be gained out of this game against Spain. We sort of knew that given Spain's performances at every level in the last sort of 2 or 3 years, previously we're underachievers perennially, but the last 3 years have just been dominant in all forms of the game. We thought this is going to be a difficult one. It was really about the performances of the group. And now, unfortunately, a lot of our excellent boys who are coming through might be a little bit scarred by this game on the world stage.
Yeah, this game, I guess they had to go out and win to get through to the round of 16. So they obviously fielded a team to reflect that. And it's backfired a bit, hasn't it?
Well, we have to wonder, in the absence of a more favourable scoreline, what were the tactics? What was the instructions? Were the boys told to go out there and enjoy their football? Were they told to go out there with a plan? Was it about possession? There are a lot of questions about Jan Beschlein's performance at these World Cups, and I think we've rightly got to question whether he's right to continue in that position.
Well, one of those questions, which should be really asked, is whether or not the players went out there to try and win these games, or whether they went out to try and not lose these games. And that's the mentality which I think needs to be addressed here.
I think, though, during the Ecuador game and during the Costa Rica game, we saw that they wanted to win those games. Mm. We knew that. You could see that they were outplayed against Ecuador, but stole a draw beautifully in the 88th minute with a Tommy Orr free kick from distance. That was a specky, and probably not since Jankos have we seen a goal in the green and gold like that from a set piece. Against Costa Rica, 3-2, twice we clawed our way back, and three times defensive errors let us down. Not to belie the performance of Joel Campbell, what a game he had, an Arsenal target. But, you know, the question then is, well, against Spain, what are the objectives? And I think by any measure, Beschlein, the result has really called into account Vashlayan's position.
In a young Socceroos, in a World Cup like this, with younger players, should we be looking to win? Is it still, given so much weight, do we still look to win it? Or do we use it to have this great atmosphere, this amazing experience to...
Learn something.
Yeah, learn something from these big games. Mm. What is the directive there?
Well, I think you've got to use the experience of the World Cups, because this is one of the first times that some of these guys have actually gone overseas. Mm. So, for instance, Ben Kanarovsky, who has had these injury problems for most of the last A-League season, he's using this as more of a pre-season for the next A-League. Mm. So it's something which Branko Cilina isn't too happy about, that it's this underdone Ben Kanarovsky going over. But it's still a competition which the players should be using as a jumping board somewhat for what the next level they could experience, because these are the next Socceroos, basically. So if you look at their squad, are they ready to be making that step up, or what are they learning from this competition?
And a lot of these players are currently first-team members, or at least on the bench for A-League clubs.
Exactly right.
So it's not like they don't get football over here.
Just getting it back to the point of Matt's question, though, it should be about... There should be two focuses, I think. The first focus is to learn something as a group, because they're going to be playing together a lot more in the next 10 years. Mm. That's got to be objective number one, to really get that team cohesiveness, the unity, the spirit in the camp, but also to start playing together in a really cohesive fashion, keeping possession, dominating games. And then the second thing after that, I believe, are the results. And if we don't win any games, well, that's okay, as long as we've achieved something in the first objective, and that will lead us to win more games into the future. And I think, yes, results are important, but I think it's more about learning when you're under 20.
And looking at the three World Cups that have just taken place, the under-17s, 20s, and the women's, all three of them have suffered from defensive lapses, I guess. And we've kind of spoken a bit about this on Beyond the 90, but the type of soccer that Australia is playing has changed somewhat.
It sure has. We've seen at the top of the park, we've seen some excellent individual performances. Certainly Kai Simon against Norway was a cracking game. We've seen some cracking strikes. Jesse Macaroonis from distance in the first game of the under-17s World Cup. That was an amazing strike and a memorable thing against the Cote d'Ivoire. Then we had, in this World Cup, we had Tommy Orr's strike from distance. What's really been fresh in the mind, though, are some of those defensive lapses. We had Tom King, who plays for Liverpool in the under-16s in the Joeys, really with some questionable blunders. It's not because of a lack of skill or preparation. It's just that in that big moment, the choke happens. And then same with Servet Ilsenlaar, isn't there? And we don't want to harp too much about her, about that in particular, because there's a lot more to focus on. But in the context of those games, she had some clangers.
Which we've talked so much about.
We have. Yeah.
And it is about, as I guess getting back to that point, is the big game experience that young players need to find, and they will develop over time and come for 8 years' time. We'll have some amazing Socceroos to contend against.
Well, one of those players, Luke De Vier, he's just made it into the Socceroos squad for the game against Wales, which is taking place...
Thursday morning,
yeah. Mm. So Luke De Vier, formerly with Brisbane Roar, now playing his football in Korea, I believe. Fantastic talent, and he's got to be in that starting 11.
Correct. And I think, look, it's something we can't forget is that we won't lose that Australian steely determination. We won't forget how to put in. It's been something that the Australian psyche's never lacked. But in the last three World Cups, we've actually taken the foot off the gas in that respect. So it's about getting balanced. It's about keeping possession, I think, and being comfortable on the ball.
The Socceroos game, do we have many expats in Wales?
Yeah, sure.
Do we?
The Joneses are a big part of Australia. They're Welsh originally,
yeah.
And the Joneses probably go back to work in the UK and in Wales. So I'm sure we'll see a few expat Aussies there.
Let's hope so. All right. Recently, the Sydney FC fan forum happened. That was where Dirk Melton had a chat to about 120 Sydney FC fans that turned up for the night and discussed, I guess, his direction for Sydney FC in the behind the scenes of the club. And isn't it great that we get this insider look into what his goals are and what he's going to do for Sydney FC? He's talked a bit about using the Bulldogs as a reference point. Michael, you disagree with using the Bulldogs and comparing them a bit with Sydney FC in that they have some different scenarios, different situations there.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm really keen to see Dirk Melton exert some of his influence on the club, and I'm really excited about some of his plans. The issue, though, is copying the Bulldogs model. The issues faced by the Bulldogs a few years ago when he was calling the shots there and the difficulties faced by Sydney FC are poles apart. They're very different issues. Sydney FC struggles for media attention, which translates into 7,000 strong crowds.
Yeah.
And it's also a playing issue and not keeping personnel for long enough. The issues with the Bulldogs that they were facing were off-field indiscretions and major indiscretions, disgusting indiscretions, and then, you know, some of their fans getting into fights as well in the crowds. But they never lacked the media attention.
No. And what you say there about this media attention, Dirk addressed it in this meeting of the Sydney FC cohort. If you haven't listened to this or haven't watched it already, jump on the Sydney FC website and check it out because it's an intriguing 47 minutes of footage. Talking about the media attention, he did address it, and he said the media are in a position of power. And I know that he has gone about meeting with individual media groups, and he's still meeting with more of them. We're waiting for the call.
Yes. The podcast and the Football Sack and Beyond the 90, we're waiting for you, Dirk Melton. So yeah. If you're listening in, please get in contact with us.
To be fair, I think we actually have had a call, but we haven't followed it up.
Really?
That's probably what the flashing light on the phone has been.
Yes, yeah. It's Dirk Melton.
Whoops.
I'm really excited to hear what he's got to say. I believe he's a performer, and I really am excited that there might be some synergies between maybe getting some league-related interests off the back of Dirk Melton joining Sydney FC.
That will be fleeting, though, won't it?
Yeah, to an extent, but I think he's got some ideas perhaps about connectivity, joint media appearances, hopefully, and to try to leverage some of his previous experience.
One of the main things he talked about was that the on-field and off-field performances cannot be related. He said, who is the most successful sporting club in Australia? And that is Collingwood. And they haven't performed that well on the field, and yet their support and their management is second to none.
Yeah, and that's something which Dirk Melton is trying to work on, especially with his Bulldogs experience that you guys have touched on. He's referenced here with an article by The World Game that on the field there's the 4-4-2 model, but off the field there's a different model that he's trying to work with. That's a 5-10-5 model. Mm. Now that's 5 stakeholder goals, the 10 brand drivers, and 5 core competencies. That's what you have to get right. If you can work out those models little steps first, and you can set a structure to it, then everything comes into plan. And I think that's what he did with Bulldogs, because he made that more of a family event, and he built it all up slowly, because there was a lot of somewhat corruption and a lot of disrepute which resulted around the Bulldogs back in 2004, back when Dirk first started with the club. And that's what he's going to do with Sydney FC, I believe. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, Sydney's problems aren't so much to do with that. It's probably to do with a lack of cohesiveness around the organisation. With a team that has no competitors in its market, a team who has a marketplace of 4.5 million drawing 7,000, the problems are more to do with the organisation not kicking their own goals and perhaps not even setting them. And it's been really punishing. I've left a few Sydney FC games in the last season just out of sheer frustration. Yes, that's what the crowd was doing. It was diminishing numbers, and
at you leaving.
Yes, at me leaving. Well, look, I put it this way, and the three of us are in the same boat. We are absolute football fanatics. We live, eat, and breathe this thing, this game. And if our club isn't performing, and we're not interested, what on earth is going to happen amongst the broader non-footballing community who were at one point willing to give it a go? Having said that, though, brand new season, looking forward to it. The jersey looks phenomenal. There's a lot to like about this squad.
Ooh, have you seen the jersey? Because it's not meant to be released until tomorrow.
There was something released which looked very reasonable.
And then I think it got taken down. So it is released tomorrow, Monday. The 8th tomorrow, is it?
Yes, it is.
The 8th. And there's also another jersey in the A-League clubs.
Wellington Phoenix is set to be released on Wednesday at 12:30, middle of the day.
So a lot of off-field excitement in
exactly
the A-League.
Exactly right.
Well, you've got to be excited about any little the currency away. Well,
that comes out. Look, one of the big questions that a lot of people are asking is Melbourne Victory, are they going to release the long sleeve jerseys for people to buy, like for the supporters? Because a lot of people adore that long sleeve jersey that Melbourne Victory got to wear against Celtic. A lot of people want to know, are they going to get these long sleeve jerseys? So Melbourne Victory, if you are listening, please, please let your supporters know whether or not they're going to be able to buy the long sleeve kits.
Pete, you're going to go Supernova in a moment. Don't go Supernova.
That was a prelude, wasn't it?
Don't blow your load too early.
Oh, wow. Okay. Do we have a sound effect?
whatever could we sound effect that with?
Okay. That's just a sound effect.
Now just throw you random things.
Turn them the off. While we're talking about Melbourne Victory, there's been a few noises coming from their camp. First of all, to talk about it again.
Ad nauseum.
Harry Kiel, Monday could be an announcement again. They did release a statement on Friday saying that they wouldn't comment further other than to say that a decision will be reached in the coming days. Rumour is that it's on Monday and that yes or no, Harry Kiel will come.
And I'm excited about this announcement. It seems as though this has been a culmination. I really fervently believe that this is coming to a head because Holger Ozic didn't pick him for the Socceroos, said that he needed to get in shape. No EPL club has come forward to pick him. And now we've had a rolling ultimatum, a farcical ultimatum. However, on Monday, rumour has it that there will be an enormous announcement.
I am also, like you, excited about this announcement, even if it's no, I'm not coming. Decidedly.
Yeah.
No, because I have heard too much about it to... It's all speculative. It's all up in the air. I want a firm decision, yes or no.
And what's most disappointing about this whole thing is that for years and years and years, Australian soccer fans have looked at the Premier League and seen Mark Viduka, Harry Kiel, and wondered, when they get to this point in their career, they're going to come home and the Australian domestic football scene is going to see such a lift.
The time is now. And Mark
Viduka lazed about and, you know, I suppose that's just part of his psychology. He's an amazing footballer, but didn't come home to support the league. If Harry Kiel ums and ahs and faffs about, I just want an answer. And I think the Australian football fraternity really deserves it as well.
The next bit of news about Melbourne Victory, and up here in Sydney we kind of relish in this a bit, is that they lost to Dandenong Thunder.
Dandenong Thunder. Dandenong Thunder, who are probably one of the less successful Victorian Premier League sides. I mean, and they lose to them. Amazing.
Earlier in the season, or earlier in the off-season, rather, for the A-League, Christian Leyland, our chief of staff, he stated that Dandenong Thunder, best state league in the country. Since that happened, they dropped points and then they went right down the table and they didn't even make the finals. So isn't it interesting to see Melbourne Victory now lose to them?
Exactly.
Right. However, in some respects, we have to respect what Christian Leyland said.
Yeah, well,
ahead of time, they beat the A-League's most successful side.
It is fuel for his argument. I still state that Sydney Olympic are better than that.
Yeah.
This is the last bit on Melbourne Victory, before we go to a quick break. The fans, they've started an interesting initiative, haven't they, Michael?
Yeah, they've signed a charter with Victorian Police, and the Melbourne Victory fans have had their issues with what they call rational fan behaviour. Every time that a Victorian police officer saw a bunch of people jumping up and down and singing, they saw it as being some sort of crowd issue, and they moved to stop it. Now we've got, after the VicPol tweet scandal, we've now got a charter of accepted behaviour between Victorian Police and Melbourne Victory fans, and I think it's a great step forward in terms of education for the police, but also to get greater understanding between the two groups and to try to foster some sort of harmonious relationship. Sydney FC fans in the Cove have a beautiful relationship with security at the grounds. That at first security thought, gee, we've got a massive group of people who are pretty riled up here. But as the seasons have gone on...
The crowds have dwindled.
Yes. But the Cove has remained reasonably constant. And I think as the seasons have gone on, key members of the Cove have actually fostered really good relationships with those security guards that generally sit and watch the Cove year on year on year. So let's hope that starts in Melbourne.
All right. We will take a quick break and be back after this.
For the latest news, opinion, match reports, and for more on the A-League, head to our website at thefootballsack.com.
Boys, there is a bit of a fun movement happening.
A fun movement.
A fun movement? What?
Go with me.
Is this dancing? Some sort of dancing thing?
Should I be scared?
It's a box step. Just if you jump up and do one now, it's a fun movement.
I'm worried.
Online. Sackism. Now, Sackism is a religion.
It's a way of life. I've been told.
It's more than a religion. It's a way of life.
It's a way of, it's an ethos. It's a guiding principle.
Yeah. So basically, what Sackism is, above all things, is a undying love for the Football Sack website.
And the Football Sack podcast. And the Football Sack individuals.
Yeah.
Dare I say it.
The people who recognise Sackism as their religion, they hold the Football Sack in really high regard, and the individuals as well, I would say.
More than others, I would say they
hold Matt Greenlaw in pretty high regard.
And Michael Rochek as well. And Pete. And Pete as well. Yes.
Yeah. They're the kind of top three. The Holy Trinity,
It's like, who's this Christian Leyland guy?
So are we going to ask them to send money to us? Is that
No, we're not going to do that at all. We are not that type of early morning Christian radio show.
If you love the Football Sack, send a dollar too.
But what we will ask you is that if you are one of those perhaps closet Sackisms.
Sackites,
is that what we're calling them? Jump onto facebook.com/thefootballsack and there's a link to Sackism, the new religion.
And might I just add as well, this with the census coming up,
yeah,
this is what we want to get as many people as possible putting the fact that they are a devotee of Sackism.
You've got to be really careful about what you say, Sackist, because one Sackite wrote in and said, don't call it Sackist to your partner, to your significant other, because they might get the wrong impression.
But I think Sackism is what we should agree on, the form that we of the answer that we put in, and I think Sackism is what we should put in. And hopefully we can get enough numbers, maybe not this census, but next census, just like Jedi.
Yeah, it's a long term.
It's census night, Tuesday, the 9th of August. Remember to put that down as your religion, Sackism. Done.
Beautiful.
Check.
Excellent.
Check. We'll check that off. Thank you for bringing that game back, Supernova.
Thank you.
And that leads perfectly into the next game that we're going to play. Not necessarily a game, because it's a rather serious note. It's a segment that we brought in, that we said we'd bring in. Yeah, there we go. Here is Pete Goes Supernova.
Okay, this is one of my segments, which I love. I get to go crazy here, and my topic this week is the friendly between Bankstown City and Newcastle Jets. That ended Newcastle Jets 9-0. Now, what I don't like about this is the fact that it was 9-0, that result. Now, A-League clubs, if you want to get the attention of State League clubs and State League supporters, you should not be winning games 9-0. All you're going to do is draw a bigger difference between State League sides and A-League sides. Now, most of these State League sides, their fans, they don't like A-League clubs at the moment anyway. So why on earth would you want to try and push them away by winning a game 9-0? What you should be doing, 2-0 win, say, oh yeah, we took about easy in the second half there. Who gives a shit if you don't? So the thing is, you have to be trying to bring these people in. If you're only going to support and get these fans by getting an easy win. Like the 1-0, the 1-0 draw between MacArthur Rams and Sydney FC, good example there, because MacArthur Rams, they're like, yay, we got a 1-0 result against Sydney FC. Newcastle Jets, what are you going to do? How are you going to say, oh yeah, 9-0? Yeah, it was easy. This is stupid.
And that was Pete Goes Supernova.
And that was a pretty amazing first year installment of Pete Goes Supernova. It's actually started on Beyond the 90 a few moments ago, without warning, completely without warning. And I will repeat what I said back then, which was, football is not about diplomacy unless, you know, it's North Korea and South Korea, and even then it's a very competitive game. And I think what's, you know, what we take from 9-0 is the Newcastle Jets mean business this season. Do we know who scored all of those goals? Is there some sort of call on that? Because if it's Jason Kolina banging in 8 goals, I'm pumped to see the Jets play the Mariners this year.
I'm kind of sitting on the fence. I see what you're saying, Michael. I understand. But I do like the fact that close results mean a good publicity for the A-League sides. Shows that they're, I don't know. I guess they respect the state league sides a bit more, perhaps.
Well, it did take 25 minutes for the first goal to be scored. Mm-hmm. Marko Jesic scoring that one.
Right.
Just on the MacArthur Rams example that you gave, Pete, it was all over the newspapers for the MacArthur. Is it the Advocate, I believe?
Yeah.
It was in there, so they got a good... they got a few thousand fans to come and watch.
It has to be in the paper. Mm. If it's not in the paper and it's not saying, oh, we got a 1-1 result against Sydney FC. Like, Sydney FC, obviously, they're frustrated about that result because they expect to win games against state league opposition. But still, that's what will help bring it, because now MacArthur Rams supporters will go, hey, we actually did something. Yeah. Maybe we could do this again. And then have more friendlies against A-League clubs and keep challenging it. It'll boost their confidence, which boosts the confidence of the fans.
Look,
it's a cycle.
I disagree with you, because I think a game of football is a game of football. And I think that respect for... Stop trying to out-run me. I think respect...
I'll just turn off your mic.
I think footballing respect... you're still going supernova over there.
Yeah, I know.
I think footballing respect... we talk about the A-League's club respecting the opposition. I think... beating somebody 9-0 shows that they took that fixture seriously. And I also believe that you know, if a game is there to be won 9-0, it should be won 9-0. There's no respect for the game if you're only winning 2-0 and you should be winning 9-0.
Yeah, and I understand. And that's why I'm kind of on the fence. I see both sides of the story. They are, at the end of the day, preparing for their A-League season. Mm. It is, yes, a while away, but they do need to treat it like a proper fixture.
Absolutely. Right.
Well, before we go, guys, I posted a question out on the Twitter sphere as well as on the Book of Faces to ask what should our podcast be called, because we're sick of being called The Sunday Show.
Mm. We didn't
pick it. It just got given to us.
The Friday guys have called their show The Friday Show. So it's very, very creative.
I posted the question out. We had J. Rob lots of Z's there. The options, The Sunday Fry-Up, The Hangover Cure, possible. Melbourne Heart Hammer says The Sack on Sunday. A bit.
That's on Sunday.
That's the best so far. That is quite nice.
Dale Roots says Taking Two in the Sack.
There's three of us.
Yeah. Scouse Raw says A Ball in the Goal is Worth Two in the Sack.
Jesus.
What? A
Ball in the Goal is Worth Two in the Sack. It's a bit long, but that's okay. We'll forgive that. And the Sack's own writer, Chris Hills, has said The Sunday Sack.
The Sunday Sack.
Yeah.
Two Sunday Sacks. And I think, or The Sack on Sunday.
The Sack on Sunday or The Sunday Sack.
I like The Sunday Sack.
If you have more options, we will let this run for the entire week before we officially name our show.
Yeah.
So get us on Twitter. So it's twitter.com/TheFootballSack. Or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheFootballSack.
And that about wraps up our show. Thank you, guys. Thank you for welcoming me back into the studio.
The fold.
We kept your seat warm for you.
Into the sack, I guess.
I'm going to welcome you back into the sack, man.
All right. Jump on our website. There are some great articles up online. There's one by a guy called Matt Greenlaw who? Matt Greenlaw?
That guy's a legend.
Never heard of him.
Legend of the game.
He's part of the Holy Trinity of Sackism. Yeah. He has written an article on Patricio Perez and his influence on Mustafa Amini, so check that out. There will shortly be an article up about Carol Kissel, who's just returned to Sydney FC. And Michael Rochak across from me has written that. So that exclusive interview will be up very shortly. We will see you next week, guys. Tune in next week on Friday to The Friday Show. See you later.
That was the Football Sack Podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe on iTunes to stay up to date with all of the football action across Australia.